Good morning and welcome to CFTRI's very own Thali Tale, the fortnightly audio digest. Thali Tales brings you useful information on nutrition, food research, hygiene and food safety. Brought to you every fortnight by CSIR Central Food Technological Research Institute, Mysuru. Volume number 1 and issue number 9, 21st June 2019. In this package, Thali Tales brings you proteins, workhorses of life's engine, discovering cooking and nutrition. An interview with Dr. Sridevi Annapurna Singh, Chief Scientist, CSIR, CFTRI, Mysuru. Proteins, workhouses of life's engine. When it comes to the nutrition, probably the first word that we all hear is protein. Talk of any nutritious food, protein has to be in it. This is so routine that sometimes even foods that do not get us any protein but provide other nutrients are also considered to be rich source of protein. Where do they come from? What do they do in our body? There is one word answer for all the questions. Everywhere or everything. Yes, proteins are everywhere. Proteins come from everything that we eat and they do everything conceivable in our body. It is interesting that the word protein itself gives the substance a top order place among chemicals. Because the word means in Swedish the first place holder. The word was coined by the famous Swedish chemist John Jacob Berzelius in 1838. He believed that these were the most important chemicals for all the living organisms and hence named them as the first order chemicals or proteins. How many proteins are there? There is no count, of course. Forget the number of proteins in our body. Their number even in the tiny bacteria could be very high. Roughly, it is estimated that our body contains about 20,000 proteins. Wait, the number only says about their diversity. In fact, half of a body sans water is plain muscle protein. And there are others too. Like the proteins in the red pigment, in the blood, in the nerve cells and so on. Proteins are long chain like molecules. We can compare them to a string made of differing combinations of 20 different colored beads. These beads are called amino acids. A body or any living organisms is a reaction vessel where these amino acids are first separated from one protein and then restrung into other proteins. This process of breaking and making of protein goes on unceasingly in all the living organisms. And not just when they are alive, even after their death it continues. In other words, anything that happens in a body is the result of a change in a protein. A blink of the eye, a twist of the muscle, the sprint of an athlete or the instant respiration all happens due to action and interaction of many proteins. So, if you think that proteins are only part of food that help us to build muscular body, you are at fault. For that is not only the function of proteins in the body. Biologists look at proteins as a vital driver of all things that happens in a living form. But then why do nutritionalists insist on eating enough proteins? The answer for that question lies in our body. A body can only make some 10 out of 20 amino acids. The rest 10 need to be supplied through our diet. The later set are called essential amino acids. Unfortunately, in the world that is so imperfect, there is no ideal or perfect food that can provide all the essential amino acids. to some extent, milk and egg provide all types of amino acids. Meat and fish can supply all essential amino acids, but may not be in amount that a body requires. Plant proteins, on the other hand, supply only some amino acids. But then what do proteins do in a body? Well, some proteins are also enzymes. That is, they drive the numerous chemical reactions happening in a body. For example, pepsin is a protein and its function is to digest other proteins in the digestive system. So is trypsin. Or take the very popular protein called hemoglobin. Hemoglobin is not an enzyme. It just carries oxygen or carbon dioxide with it. What it carries depends on the surrounding chemical environment. But this ability to carry either oxygen or carbon dioxide, it's so vital for us. As we respire, it helps us to take in oxygen from the air and to supply it to various organs. Of course, the other popular proteins are the muscle proteins. Unlike hemoglobin, which is almost round in shape, muscle proteins are very long. They are also elastic and can shrink or expand. This ability is what helps us to move our limbs and our hearts to pump blood across the body. Yes, proteins can keep our moods too. Small proteins, which are short chain of few amino acids, are called peptides. Many of these are also hormones. Some are so effective that they are used as medicines. Some peptides carry messages about the happening of the world to the brain. Endorphins are such peptides produced by the brain. They elevate our moods or reduce pain. Remember insulin, the medicine that diabetes rely upon. It is a hormone, no doubt. It is also a peptide. Another important protein is choline esterase, an enzyme. Without our nervous system is as good as dead, because this protein helps nerve impulses, the message from the brain, to cross the gaps between nerve cells. Many animal poisons are proteins or peptides. Cobra contains deadly peptides that can stop our nervous system in its track, in turn paralyzing us. Yes, proteins are foods and peptides are digested proteins. But without both, probably an engine like human body could not work. Berzelius might have named proteins had the first in the list chemicals by mistake, but he was not very much wrong.
Discovering cooking. This is not about any cookbook or recipe. It is about when humans started cooking. This question is both curious and important, because it is believed that without cooking, human civilization could not have grown to the extent that we see it today. You don't have to look very far for evidence. Watch chimpanzees, our closest cousins in the animal world. Chimpanzees use tools to pluck fruits or pick termites from holes in the ground, but they are dead scared of fire. And no one has seen a chimpanzee turning embers to pick tubers, have you? Fire and cooking made us what we are today. Cooking has helped us in many ways. It gave us some free time, helped us in cultivation and usage of plants that were actually not food, encouraged us in tool making, and thus excited the human intelligence and allowed it to flower. But when did we learn the art of cooking? Obviously, cooking would have started after we discovered fire and its uses. In olden days, cooking relied on fire. There was not electricity or microwave to create any new recipes. It was a simple boiling, roasting, frying, or smoking in the fire. Secondly, Cooking started only after humans learned how to control the fire. In other words, kitchens must have started only after humans could start a fire and kill it on their own. When did we do it? There is no simple answer. Fire does not leave any evidence. Even the ash and charcoal that are left in the wake of a fire do not last. So, there are no fossil fires to learn about when all the cooking began. But clever scientists have always drawn conclusions from indirect evidences. Burnt bones, remnants of hemoglobin in a hearth, a starch grain sticking to a tooth, a pit dug in the ground may all give us clues as to what our ancestors were eating and how did they do it. It is generally believed that cooking must have started somewhere between 2.5 lakh years ago to 30,000 years ago, in a period of human history that scientists call as the Paleolithic Age or the Stone Age. It was the time when humans learned to cut stone tools and use them for hunting. Obviously, it helped them in turning from a predominantly vegetarian diet to a meat-eating animal. But evidence for serious cooking can be seen only in the late Stone Age, maybe some 30,000 to 10,000 years ago. Fire was not invented. It was there as wildfire or as lightning, but its use for cooking was invented. The earliest evidence for use of fire is in Israel, in the deep caves of Qesim and Hayonim. The caves have a hearth, a place where fire was kept. Whether the fire was used to cook food or not is not very clear. There are some burnt bones which could either have been cooked food or just plain fuel for burning fire. Either way, the evidence shows that humans had learned to control the fire. These caves are about 2.5 to 1.5 lakh years old. Wasn't food cooked before? There is no evidence that either cooking or for using fire before this period. Although our ancestors such as Australopithecans and Neanderthals could have used fire. There is evidence of fire in the Wonderwork Cave in South Africa, which could have been only artificial. The conditions in that cave show that natural fire could not have occurred there. Some burnt bones have also been found, but whether they were used as fuel or food is the question. Real cooking needs vessels to heat, and obviously that could have happened only after pottery was learnt. The earliest pottery is dated to around 20,000 years ago. So we can safely assume that serious cooking started only from then onwards. Before that, open fires might have been the norm. In Africa and South America, stones that appear to have been heated to very high temperature are often found at sites where humans lived. Could they have been used as tawa to heat meat or egg? What started first? Scientists believe that cooking and heating were the first cooking methods that could have been used. Open fires were enough to do this. Fires started by using naturally occurring fire that could have made this possible. But there is no definite proof for this happening before 40,000 years ago. Though evidence for fire is seen at places, whether they were used for cooking or just for warming is not clear. The next culinary skill is boiling or baking. Stone-lined hearths are seen in some West Asian and African sites. These are evidence for cooking. In North American plains, one can also find very old, sometimes 20,000-year-old, boiling pits. The pits are lined with hide and are littered with remnants of fire. It is believed that the hides were filled with water and heated to steam or boil foods. Since a lot of grease is also found along with these, it is believed that crushed bones were boiled in these pit boilers to get the fat out. Was cooking invented in one place and spread to other places? Or was it invented at several different times by separate tribes, at separate times and in separate places? There is no easy answer to all these questions. The present assumption is that cooking processes could have been invented simultaneously in several places. So next time, before you light that stove or switch on that microwave, just give it a thought about how this first science has all come about into our homes.
Healthy eating in childhood, adult, and even in old age is important for proper growth and development. India is facing serious threat of undernutrition, where more than half of the women of reproductive age suffer from anemia. We have with us Dr. Sridevi Annapurna Singh, Chief Scientist, CSIR CFTRI, to tell us what nutrition women need.
Good morning, ma'am.
Morning.
Do women need special nutrition? If so, why?
Actually, when you look at the women in the childbearing age, due to the hormonal changes that are happening in their body, either during menstruation or during childbirth, specific nutrients are required by them. These include calcium, iron, and folic acid. Folic acid is especially important because it can lead to birth defects in the baby. And then in India, most of the women have a plant-based diet, which means that iron could become a limiting micronutrient. And this has to be given through supplement if they are anemic. Because as you know, iron is one of the critical micronutrients that is present in hemoglobin. Hemoglobin is a protein that is present in the red blood cells and it helps to carry oxygen and carbon dioxide. So if we do not have iron, then hemoglobin is also compromised, which means that we become anemic and we cannot work to the potential that we should be doing. For very older women, that is in the age group of 51 to 70 years, the hormone levels drop down in their bodies and this can lead to resorption of calcium from the bone. That means they become osteoporotic. And if further calcium is not given in the diet, it could lead to bone fractures in the postmenopausal stage.
What nutrition should girl children get at a young age, ma'am?
Generally, girls we find they are anemic. If we talk about India, most of the population is dependent on plant-based diet. So you find that many of the women, like I said earlier, because of hormonal changes, they tend to become anemic also. And if iron is not given in the diet, then it could lead to severe anemia, which means that they will not be able to carry out work. They are not able to bear children also. In a later stage because they themselves are not able to provide nutrition to the fetus. When you look at iron especially, there is what we call as heme iron and non-heme iron in food. Heme iron is present in meat and other animal products. Non-heme iron is in plants. So most of us are eating a plant-based diet, which is non-heme iron. Non-heme iron is very difficult to digest and absorb by the body. And that is why there is more anemia. Further, many of our protein sources, like seeds, have phytate in them. This particular substance can chelate iron, calcium, zinc, most of the minerals and make it unavailable to the body. That means absorption is compromised. Especially young girls, we should ensure that they are having the proper stores of iron. They should have be given good sources of calcium so that the body is able to build the bones and store these minerals at a later stage. Even if there is a deficiency in the diet, they will be able to make up for it through the body stores. They also require a lot of good quality protein with all the essential amino acids which are required for their age as well as lifestyle.
India has a large population of women suffering from anemia. How do we tackle this through nutrition? Is there any easy way, ma'am?
As I told earlier, there is anemia in India. Nearly 70% of women in the childbearing age, because of the hormonal changes and menstruation, are found to be anemic. So one way is heme iron is very well absorbed by the body as compared to non-heme iron. So animal sources are better sources of iron because it is bioavailable. If we want from plant sources, then we should use vitamin C should be eaten along with the iron, so that, or even beta carotene. So when we eat beta carotene or vitamin C along with iron rich food, this iron which is in the Fe3 plus form gets converted to Fe2 plus, and that is better bioavailable and better absorbed by the body. So we can increase the iron absorption by taking it along with vitamin C and beta carotene. Any other method would be that in the presence of high amount of calcium in the diet, iron is not absorbed as well. So we should not mix iron-rich food along with high calcium foods. Especially cooking with iron vessels is very important in today's context, because the elemental iron, especially if we are cooking acidic foods, then iron will come into the food. It is known that almost 200 times the amount of iron that is there in the food originally gets increased because of cooking in iron utensils. So instead of cooking in either aluminium or stainless steel, it is better that cooking is done in iron utensils.
There is a fear among the children about taking iron tablets. Why do we need iron tablets as supplementation?
If you look at India, like I said earlier, nearly 70% of women are anemic. If you look at children also, 45% of the children are anemic. So beyond the age of 2, you find that there is rampant anemia. One way of addressing this is through supplementation. There are different kinds of anemia. It could be because of lack of folic acid. It could be because of vitamin B12 deficiency. But the most prevalent is iron deficiency anemia. So how do you give this iron? The diet that we normally follow on a day-to-day basis does not give us sufficient iron, and therefore the children have become anemic. So one way is through supplementation. So iron supplements are given to children. Now the problem is the absorption. Iron is a little difficult to absorb, and when it is given in therapeutic doses, sometimes what happens, it can lead to constipation. It can lead to some kind of a discomfort to the child. So they are reluctant to take it.
What should be the nutrition for aged ladies? Is there any special need, ma'am?
Yes. When you look at elderly women, one thing is that they usually will be on medication for one or the other disorder. It could be diabetes, it could be hypertension, and other disorders like this. Further, their mental state could be disturbed either because of medication or because they are living alone, or it could be that they've lost their spouse, for example. So this also makes them psychologically not wanting to cook for themselves and eat. Another problem could be that they may not be having their natural teeth. It could be that the acid that is produced in the stomach is low in quantity, and therefore the digestibility of food is affected. And because they are in the postmenopausal stage, it means that they could be osteoporotic, since their estrogen levels are very low. Estrogen protects the calcium from the bone being taken away. And therefore, they could be osteoporotic but not knowing it. So keeping all this in mind, they do need a lot of protein, because whatever they are losing and the body is aging, it has to make up for it. Plus, they lead sedentary lifestyle. Therefore, more easily digestible food would be a better option. And they definitely require calcium. And they could also think of some digestive supplements. Like today you find a lot of enzymes are being marketed as digestive aids. So if the stomach has lower acid or lower pepsin content, therefore the protein is not digested. Instead of avoiding to eat protein, they can use a digestive aid which will help them to digest the protein they are eating. Further, you do find some products which have enzyme hydrolysates, which means that they are pre-digested and that food, when it is given, it can easily be absorbed. It need not go through the entire process of digestion.
Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you.
Dear all, that was Thalites for this fortnight. Hope you relished it. Kolegala Sharma contributed the stories. Narration was by myself, Abdul Majid, and Kavya Bhatt. Thali Tales is a free magazine produced and distributed by CSIR CFTRI Mysuru. You can also freely share Thali Tales with anyone you need. Listeners may send their queries and suggestions on food and related issues directly through WhatsApp to 9449120618. You can also call the number 08212515910 from Monday to Friday to ask questions related to food research. Thali Tales will try to provide answers in subsequent issues. See you again next fortnight. Until then, bye-bye and have a great and a pleasant day.